I know the kind of pain you're feeling, Alex. I once had it myself.
You some kind of doctor?
No, Alex. I am Magneto, and I have come to offer you sanctuary.
Welcome to the second season of Grounded Futures Podcast. This is the show where we discuss topics ranging from climate change to identity to how youth can gain new skills to thrive amid current and ongoing disasters that we are collectively facing. We are your hosts, Liam and Carla.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carla, and thanks for tuning in to Grounded Futures. We produce the show on Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, but our guests are from around the world. Each episode has a short segment that happens around mid-show that is called Delighting in Our Friends, where we share our friends' work and delight in them. The music for our show is by Sauergout, also known as Zach Bergman.
And for today's show, we are joined by Tahia Ahmed. Tahia is a full-spectrum birth worker with commitment to health autonomy and healing justice. She is a co-founder and organizer at the Nesting Doula Collective, an exclusively BIPOC initiative providing trauma-informed, culturally affirming, and anti-oppressive care to pregnant, birthing, and postpartum families. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Tahia. Yay. I was trying to think back when we met, and I'm pretty sure it was like 2010 or something. You were doing Artquake.
Yeah, a long time ago, a decade ago. I've been in preparation for this. I've been reflecting a lot about those years, actually. Nice. And many things that I miss about them that aren't a part of my life anymore.
We have that question for you, so you can give us a little, that comes a bit later, because we're really going to dive in to the birth stuff, because we're really excited about having you on to talk about that. Liam turned 18 yesterday, so it was the last time I gave birth was 18 years ago, and my doula was really important, and I'm just so grateful. Yeah, really grateful for the work, and I'm excited to hear the path that got you there. Yeah, I really appreciate how you connect birth justice to climate justice, and it resonated deeply when I read this, what you said. This is you. The land is our first womb. Our bodies are made of earth and have an intimate relationship to land and all earth beings. The land provides us with wisdom and medicine that we depend on for birth and sustaining life. Can you say more about that and this whole entire connection?
Sure. Yeah, so at the Nesting Doula Collective, we work with BIPOC communities, so Black, Indigenous, and people of color, people who have been displaced from our lands, people who've had their lands taken from them, stolen from them. And for us, returning to our birthing traditions requires us to return to our relationship to the land. And in terms of the connection between climate justice and birth justice, and especially thinking about the future and what that means for us, I think that for both, we are thinking about the future. And with birth justice and birthing, we're thinking about the generations to come. And something that we know or hear about in our communities these days, especially with so much crisis happening, is this idea of, or this question of, whether we should be having babies, whether we should be growing our families. What does this mean in terms of a future that's so uncertain and bringing people into the world where there is so much crisis happening? And we like to look to the land in terms of an answer to that question. And the land always reminds us of life. Even in times of crisis, the land and waters still bring life into the world and continue to do that, even in adverse conditions. And so that's an example of a teaching from the land that we bring into our work as birth workers, and thinking about beyond that, also just medicines that come from the land, how, especially for birthing people and bodies that birth, how connected those cycles and those rhythms are to the land itself. And by the land, I mean not only the earth beneath our feet, but waters and all living beings, plants and animals. And also recognizing that we have animal bodies. And if you've ever given birth or witnessed a birth, that becomes very clear to us that that's the case.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. I really love that you're intertwining that. And I think it's a front line that's so important, like the connection of climate change and climate disaster and birth, because it is coming up a lot. I definitely am someone who's pushing back to the rhetoric of like, this is the dystopia we've never had before, because it seems to come from a certain privilege to say mm-hmm. such a thing. There's been many dystopias for many, many peoples all over the world, always since colonialism started and conquering. And, you know, I have an Indigenous friend with a young kid, and she gets asked all the time, aren't you terrified? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, she's just like, the Indigenous people who were, they must be terrified having babies, or, you know, whatever. We can just look at it all over the world ongoing. So thank you so much, because having children is really important, and it's part of our experience here. And not that everyone should have children, but it's just so beautiful. And mm-hmm. There deserves to be decolonized and healing and lovely. And thank you. Sorry, I love hearing all those.
But yeah, it's really beautiful. I'm very inspired by the work you all do at Nesting Doula. It's so important, so thank you. I just turned 18 and have been bouncing around the ideas of getting to some kind of wellness/health work, especially with regards to supporting my fellow LGBTQIA+ folks. And lately I have been feeling a pull towards birth work. So with all of that, what advice would you give to a younger person pursuing this work?
Oh my God, that sounds amazing. That's so exciting. I love when people express interest in this work. I think that if you are someone who finds themselves checking in with friends when they're struggling, or if you find yourself accompanying people to places that they need to be, or cooking people food or gathering people, you're already doing it. That's the work. That's showing up for community, that's care work, and you're already doing it. And that's something that we like to dispel through the collective and through the work that we do as well, because birth work specifically, among other forms of care work, has been professionalized and commodified and brought into capitalist modes of production and has become professions. And while, yes, people should be compensated for their work in equitable ways, and people ultimately, when I talk about compensation in equitable ways, I mean people should have their needs met and then some. But that doesn't necessarily have to happen through a capitalist model of providing care or doing care work. So I think it's really important to uplift people who are doing that work in community in informal ways. And one way we can do that is by working together so that we make the work more sustainable, so that our livelihoods are ones that are cared for and cared after by each other, and so that we have each other's back to do it. And I think it's hard to do this kind of work if we are wanting to do it in an anti-capitalist way by ourselves. So my advice would be to connect with other people who are doing that work, and also really trust that you're already doing it. If you're even considering this work, I guarantee that you're doing it already. And I guess just like a final thing that I like to say is that as birth workers, we're often on call. That's the nature of our work, because birth can happen at any time. And truly for this work, it's a call that most of us hear to get to this work. And that's the first time we answer the call. So it's just really exciting to hear that you're hearing this call as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, I've always felt that I was going to go into some kind of care work, and then Carla was like, oh, I felt into it, and I think it's probably like around birth and caregiving with that. And I was like, oh, probably is. I used to think about therapy stuff, but then I was always like, oh, that's deep stuff that might not be, you know, that easy for me and stuff like that. So
Birth work is really tangible in certain ways that other forms of care work may not be, and that makes that work more accessible for some people too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, if you're already caring for people in your community, you're already halfway there to doing it. So it's like, that's a really good message for people.
What a beautiful, beautiful answer. I had goosebumps the whole time. And I think it has a little bit, because I've known you for a decade and watched you grow and change and shift. I think I met you when you were still in high school. So it now, as we set up at the beginning of the show here, here's the question about us, sharing with us. When did you first become active in organizing? And was there like a spark or, watershed moment or moments? Obviously, I know it's always going. And I'm really interested in ideas and how they change and what ones stay and remain and run through as a thread through the work. And if you could maybe speak to those. And and you can also talk a little bit of like where you're from and where you're like in terms of living, where you're living now and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of organizing and what got me into that work, I don't know if there was a particular moment, but more a place. And that place for me was East Van. That's where I grew up. And I was born in Bangladesh and my family is from there. And I grew up in East Van, different parts of it, but spent most of my teens, actually all of my teens and some of my preteen years, like on Commercial Drive, and that area. And that's kind of how we got to connect over time as well. And I say a place instead of an event, because I really feel lucky that I grew up in the community that I grew up in. And I went to the schools that I went to, where I was surrounded by, both peer, like my own peers and also adults, my teachers, parents, of my, like my friends' parents, community members and mentors and activists, who created a lot of opportunities to get engaged and involved. And sometimes now I'm, just to give some context, I'm turning 30 this year. And time flies.
Wow, I had to unpause to unmute to say, wow, that's amazing.
That's I sometimes talk to people that I have met more recently like in my late 20s, and they had a very, very different experience in very different communities. And I just feel so grateful that I had a culture of activism around me. There were always people who were organizing for something or another and creating space for people to get involved. And especially for, as a young person at the time, I think people like such as yourself, Carla, like creating spaces where power was either shared or just handed over to young people in ways that, at least for me, it made me feel like I was able to do things and competent and smart and capable, and I think also like worthy of being in those spaces, talking about issues that felt so big, but also so relevant and relevant to me and the people and communities that I care about. So I think for me, it was really growing up in that community that did it for me. And I think the other part of your question was around ideas that have shifted. And I really love this question because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot over the last little while, especially as things change in the world, as we've been living through this pandemic, and just noticing shifts in myself and my ideas around change and the future. And I think that, you know, speaking to that kind of youthful energy towards change and desire to see justice and be a part of that. Over the course of my late teens and early 20s, I think was totally co-opted by organizations and institutions. So I went to post-secondary. I worked in nonprofits, a lot of them in East Van, And I, looking back on all of that, I realized that that energy that I had for radical change was then changed into a more reformist approach, which is what these institutions do, right? These institutions need to take a reformist approach to systemic change because they need to continue to exist and they need a reason to exist, rather than thinking of their work as being work that runs them out of work to do if they were doing it well. And so I think that's what has shifted for me the most over the last decade, is this, I used to actually believe that the work that these organizations were doing was it, like that was it. And, you know, that the revolution would have salaries. And I think that has shifted for me in huge ways, because at a certain point, actually many points along the way, I realized that these institutions and organizations don't care about me or the communities that I belong to or that I care about. And that was like a heartbreaking kind of time in my life, but, and that's kind of what led me to doing work that is outside of the system and grassroots, through the collective, and taking a very different approach to how I think about change and how I think about taking action and organizing.
Yeah, that was really cool. Good answer.
Eastman from us. Eastman, Van, for our American listeners and people from the world, is a smaller community in Vancouver on so-called Canada, on Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, where me and Liam live still. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, that's beautiful. And it's definitely a battle. And I love that line that revolution won't have a salary. I mean, could Marxists please learn that? Anyway, no Marxists were harmed in this episode. Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm so glad to see. Yeah, it's just wonderful to see you bloom and become doing this really revolutionary, right at the grassroots. I mean, it's beautiful. Thanks for sharing.
Definitely. This is our Delighting in Our Friends short segment. This month, we are thrilled to highlight our dear friend and family member, Zach Bergman, aka Sauerkraut. He just dropped a new awesome album called Movements in a Dead City, which is an experimental and dubstep concept album. And we both love it. All his music and art is so amazing. Movements in a Dead City was released February 4th, 2022. All music was composed and produced by Sauerkraut, mixed and mastered by Chris Bergman at Listening House Media, album art by Jason Tipton. And you can find this album over on Bandcamp at the label Collapse Structured, which is co-run by Zach.
Yeah. And by family member, we mean like my kid and Liam's brother. and yeah, we're biased, but we also really believe, you know, it's called Delighting in Our Friends. And we just really believe in amplifying and affirming and holding up the people who are in our orbit, because there's just not enough of that. We believe. Anyways, yay, Zach and his art. It's so deep. He also created a poetic verse that goes with a concept album. It's quite a bit longer than we're going to share today, but I'm going to attempt to read a little piece from it. And here, this is words from Zach on the concept, Movements in a Dead City. We prefigured a crash, receiving an automated ghost labor, crashing an accelerated capital into the abyss. Bio network devices scanning through a collection of rare Japanese net animations from a previous forgotten century. Traditional temporality is long forgotten. The concept of moving forward in time is something more obscured. Can our bodies still be taken as tangible things beyond the idea? The ones who maintain this complex rhizomatic system we all rely on aren't even able to communicate to us syntactically. Did I need to leave? Desire felt more important than comfort. Now my body hurts, yet I don't feel regret. Maybe someday I will return, but for now I walk and feel the night air on my skin for the first time. It's no different from the simulations.
Okay, be sure to check out Zach's work on his Bandcamp under Sauerkraut, that is Sourgout, or you can also find him on Twitter at Sauerkraut. Sit back and enjoy the song that is the title of the album Movements in a Dead City. And now back to our show. We are keen on breaking down the social borders around age, and it's not always a straightforward path on how to do that well. In fact, what we hear a lot is many teens point out that in movements, it can feel performative or tokenistic. So with that in mind, do you have any advice for older organizers on welcoming and including teens in sincere ways?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely something that I've experienced before. And also I think I experience as a woman of color, as a racialized person. It's this, yeah, how inclusion often looks performative and tokenistic. And I always think that to address that, essentially what has to happen is that we need to hand over power, right? Like we're all sitting on enough tables. Like we don't need a seat at the table. We just need power, right? And I think that's the case for youth, and youth in many different ways, systemically, culturally, socially, aren't given power as a result of their age. And for older organizers to really be inclusive of younger organizers, we need to hand over power around decision making and money and how budgets get managed and leadership roles. And also to acknowledge that youth also live intersectional lives. So we still have to take equitable approaches to how we create space for young people, and that not all youth are the same and have the same experiences. And also, I think looking really authentically looking to youth and young people for the answers. And I think that's something that kind of loops back to the part of our conversation around talking about the future and the connection between birth and the land. We are really doing this for the future. And that's this, you know, that's the next generation and the generation after that and after that. And if we lose sight of that, then we lose sight of the work. And I think that happens all the time. We do lose sight of the work because we lose sight of who we're doing this for and who we're doing this with. So I think, yeah, handing over power in real ways and concrete ways, I think, is what older organizers need to be doing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, I've always had my opinions about the handing over power, how to hand over power to youth. It's like, don't just put them on a pedestal and let them run the show. You're still the adult, but also give them power and freedom and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, what's your quote from age 9? I don't need to be empowered. I need you to stop having power over me.
Oh, I don't need you to be empowered. I need adults to stop having power over me. That's what it was, yeah.
We quoted it in Joyful Militancy, me and Nick, and it's like, it's probably the thing that gets posted the most. 9-year-olds. It's amazing. But yeah, you nailed it. Thank you. And I always saw that, like, even when you were a youth and you did it, you did your art project. That wasn't like, that's what you brought. Like you shared power so beautifully and shared organizing roles and just, yeah, you just always have thought so deeply. And yeah, I just see that your work is you just are so good at connecting these complex issues that a lot of people get, I think, scared about even talking about. So with that in mind, I'm curious, is anything utterly vexing you right now or you're feeling confused about?
everything that's happening in the world. Honestly, it's sometimes really overwhelming, actually. It's hard to know whether what we're doing in our little corner of the world is actually translating into much. I think maybe something that I've been really struggling with, especially as we've been in this pandemic, and at the beginning of this pandemic, we also saw a rise in awareness around white supremacy and anti-racism through the Black Lives Matter movement. And yeah, even with everything that's come up with the pandemic itself, it's been interesting to see how limited our imagination actually is. So when we're talking about things like abolition, or we're thinking about things like mutual aid, or healing justice or liberation, it perplexes me that we have limited our imagination so much. And really, it's been done to us, I think. I think it's our imaginations have been limited by capitalism, by white supremacy, by like cis heteropatriarchy, and these dominant forces of oppression. And when I talk about imagination, I'm talking about imagining alternatives, imagining radically different solutions. And this kind of connects to what I was saying around like reformist culture, right? There's still such a, has such a hold on us, I think, and a lot of leaders and change makers and people who actually have power to change things. And that's the thing that I don't know how to get people divested from how things are, or like wanting to return to normal when nothing was normal to begin with. And I also like specifically talking about kind of progressives or activists, people working in like the nonprofit industrial complex, like I get it, like we have to pay our bills. And that's actually one of the biggest things, right? Like I hear people in workshops and, you know, gatherings and movement spaces talk about all these ideas, but then at the end of the day, we have to work this 9 to 5 to pay the bills. And so that's the part where I'm like, okay, well, how do we support people enough so that they can quit their jobs so that their activism is not their paid work, because that will not get us anywhere. And so that they can have some time and space to imagine different things, alternatives and radical change. And so that's the thing that I struggle with. Like, I don't know how we can live in this system while also dismantling it with radically different ideas, without somehow getting people supported and cared for in ways that they need to survive, which I guess is the question always anyway. So I don't think this is a new question that I'm asking.
Oh, but you weave it together so beautifully. And it is. I mean, rest in peace, Bell Hooks, but this is like what vexed her, right? I mean, this intersectionality of class, you know, of capitalism, alongside all the other issues, like we could create all these awesome communities and of care. And that meanwhile, half of us have to, or more than half have to work to
get the freedom to actually explore what you
want to do. Yeah, because we have this ideology of, we had Dean Spade on last month, and he talked about the ideology of hoarding for old age, how it actually is the thing that is destroying us. So he, to me, like he pinpointed something that we could actually talk about publicly, because he said, imagine if we, instead of hoarding, we actually took care of each other with that money, that wealth, and trusted that in our old age, we'd be taken care of back and, you know, like real mutual aid, like what mutual aid? Speaking of the industrial complex of nonprofit, one of my big things I'm worried right now is watching mutual aid get turned into that a bit. Like mutual aid is not a is not a system that bodes well with nonprofits. So that's frustrating, but I'm vexed as well, as I just wanted to say with all that as well. But
demolish empire first and then.
Yeah. And also do things like the collective you're doing is exactly showing people pathways. I heard a new word. It's called Thrutopia. And it's it busts up against the binary of utopia and dystopia. And it's this idea of writing stories and telling stories about how we go from this moment to a better future for our future ancestors. And creating collectives that are built on deprofessionalizing care is a Thrutopia. So
yeah,
I love that. I'm gonna use that if that's okay.
Oh yeah. I'm any chance I get, I talk about Thrutopia right now. I personally am more of a nowtopia person. I'm into creating things now, right now, to thrive. But Thrutopia as a story writer and a like creating stuff for the public to consume. I think that's one of the ways to get at this vexing question.
Definitely. It's about expanding our imaginations.
Like what you said. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So
connected.
Yeah. With that, given the ongoing crises we are facing, do you feel hopeful for the future?
Oh gosh. Well, I have to be, right? And I don't think I have a choice. I think my ancestors would be really disappointed if I didn't feel hopeful. And for me, I think the reason I feel hopeful is because, not because of any outcome. Actually, this is, it's great to connect this back to what you just said about the Thrutopia. Like, I actually feel hopeful about the Thrutopia. I'm unsure about what the utopia is and what it might look like or what it means to be. I don't know if there's a singular hope that we all share, right? And I don't think that there needs to be necessarily. But I think I feel hopeful about the process of getting wherever we're going. I do have a deep trust in community. And I think that that's something that was inspired in me when I was a teenager, actually, from the people around me, particularly the adults around me, actually, that really modeled what trusting each other and trusting community to show up looks like, and what it looks like to act from that place instead of acting from a place of fear or scarcity. And that's something that I think we do at the Nesting Doula Collective really well. And I think we trust that our community will show up for this work. That's why we often get the question of, why aren't you a nonprofit? Why don't you become a charity? You can access funding and all of these things. And we're like, actually, we trust that people will show up for this. And people do every time. If we're supporting a family that doesn't have groceries in the fridge and needs meal support postpartum, people show up. Our neighbors show up with meals. If someone needs housing, like, people offer that. Like, it's been incredible. And I think that's something that keeps me hopeful. And I think that the more we put ourselves in relationships of trust with each other and in community, the more examples we'll have and more experiences we'll have that affirm that hope. So I am hopeful, and that being said, I'm also like really concerned and worried and anxious about everything that's happening and everything that is to come. But there's a book about abolition that I read recently by Miriam Kaba called We Do This Till We Free Us. And that's it, right? We do this till we free us.
Fantastic book.
I keep saying that's beautiful after every answer.
Yeah, we always talk about how trust is our discipline. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I love that. Or our dogma. I think my friend was saying this the other day. Oh my God. Cornwall West talks about that dogma isn't just that religious stuff. It's also love, right? Mm-hmm. It also can be trust and all these things. And Joy James talks about the discipline of love of the mother who loves their child in prison. And, you know, like these words that we as radicals, we often go, ooh, no dogma, no discipline, no, right? And it's like,
discipline doesn't have to be violent.
It can be love, it can be trust. And in a world that wants us to not be in trust and love, and wants us to be in fear and scarcity, we have to make it a discipline. Mm-hmm. Of course, I knew that you would center trust in your project. You can feel it. It just comes off from it. Because, yeah, beautiful. Our whole platform is based on this idea of thriving in the everyday amid the disasters. And so I'm curious, and I'm sure our listeners are, how you carve out some thriving in the everyday, little pockets or bowlfuls.
Yeah, how do I carve out thriving in the everyday? Apart from doing work that I love and not being answerable to anyone other than community, other than that in my everyday life, I love to cook. And I actually hated cooking growing up. I connected to my love for cooking after I moved out, because my mom is one of those people that is very micromanaging in the kitchen. And so it was never enjoyable for me to learn to cook things or be in the kitchen to cook things because everything was done in a particular way. Which is fine. We have a different relationship now with our shared space in the kitchen. But after I moved out and I actually moved away from East Van and I moved to the island and I currently live on unceded Lekwungen in Oceanic territories, I started really missing home and I started missing my mom's cooking. And so I started cooking those recipes, like Bengali recipes, and connecting to my culture and food in that way. And so I don't just cook, I have started to gather people around food. I love doing that. I love eating with others. And really that's become a big part of what everyday thriving looks like in my life with the people that are in my life. And, you know, even as the world falls apart, we will still probably have to eat dinner is the way that I think about it. And really beautiful connections happen around food. And I think that's something that we share across traditions. And so that's something that is a big part of my life these days and something that really brings me a lot of joy and connection.
I really liked that. I really love that. That's like a big thing in our family too, the connection around food. And
yeah. So we haven't had that answer before. I think, you know, what I love about this show and you've just really exemplified this is that I think sometimes we get, feel a little like worried about the future because, or even the near, like even tomorrow because of, you know, the doom scrolling and seeing everyone's hot take on how bad everything is. And then you have conversations like this and you realize like, oh my gosh, there's so much goodness happening and so much, so much potential, so many seeds being planted and concrete work being done. That's beautiful. And thank you.
Definitely. Yeah.
Do we have like one more question and then just a...
Yeah. So how are you doing so far?
I'm doing great. Thank
good,
you.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Do you have a book or any piece of media that you'd recommend to youth to gain inspiration from, or perhaps one that inspired you in your life growing up or something? Feel free to name a few.
Wow, so much. Also, sometimes I forget the things that inspired me, to be honest. There's like so much content out there. But something that I have been recommending to people these days, and it's something that I read recently, is How We Show Up, which is a book by Mia Birdsong. I think that's how you say their first name, Mia. And it's a book that really resonated with me. I read it, I think, a year and a half ago. It's literally what the title is. It's about how we show up, and is written by an African-American woman who really highlights through her own stories and experiences and interviews with others about how we are interdependent and how connected we truly are and how we need to show up for each other. And that's kind of been the theme of my life these days with the work that I do and just also in all aspects of my life. And so I would really recommend that read to folks and see what that inspires for people.
Excellent. Love it. Is there any, before we're going to ask you like how people can find you and stuff, but is there anything that we've missed or that you feel like you wish you had said or any lasting thoughts? And then you can tie in how people can find you online and Nuala does. And we'll put everything in the show notes.
Sure. I did have a thought that was sparked by something you said earlier around discipline. And it's actually, for me, I don't know what you've experienced, but it's a word that doesn't often get shared or talked about, I feel like, in organizing spaces. And one that actually resonates for me or with me a lot, because I'm a Muslim and I practice as a Muslim, and that's a huge part of my identity and my life, and my relationship with Islam has evolved and changed over time. And you know, Carla, you've been witness to some of that as well in us working together in community. And discipline is what I actually learned from my faith that I bring into my organizing. And that's something, so when you brought up discipline earlier and the discipline of trust, it's, yeah, I think that we need more discipline overall, like the discipline of commitment, for instance, in our movements. And even, you know, talking about how we show up, the discipline of showing up. And I learned that from showing up for prayer 5 times a day or showing up in community spaces or spiritual spaces. And yeah, and I think that that's something that's really important for me to recognize that that's also something that has been a spark for my organizing and how I organize and how I do the work I do in my life. So I just wanted to share that. It was just sparked from what you shared earlier.
I have like tears.
No, so I feel like, yeah, I know. I feel that's so important because Dom cult world really does think, you know, their idea of discipline is being harsh to someone and violent. And at the end of the day, they see it as just child abuse or something.
It's the opposite of freedom. And I think in a lot of our experiences, especially in whiteness, right? Like it has a very, binary look at what it means. But yeah, I really recommend looking up, I can send you a link to, I can put it in the show notes too, is Joy James. I don't know if you know her work. She's a Black academic and scholar and thinker, and her work is just incredible. Oh, I love her. She talks a lot about this. Yeah, I love it. How can we find you?
Well, you can find me in Victoria. I love connecting with people on walks. But you can also find me, like, do you mean like online?
Yeah. How can our listeners find your work and connect with you and all your awesomeness?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram at tahia.thanni. And you can also find me through the Nesting Doula Collective. Our website is www.nestingdoulacollective.com.
Yeah, and give them money. They do good work.
Yeah, you can find me in those two places.
Thanks so much for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So uplifting. I had low capacity this morning and it was just, you just brightened my day.
Yeah.
Aw, thank you. This is great.
Thanks for listening to our show. Grounded Futures is a media production and mentorship collaborative, and this podcast is produced by Carla Bergman, Liam Joy, Jamie Lee Gonzalez, and Melissa Roach. And our sound tech is by Chris Bergman.
Resources and transcripts for this episode are in the show notes. If you want to donate some funds or check out our other awesome shows, head over to groundedfutures.com or email us with comments and suggestions at groundedfutures@gmail.com. And please tune in next time to hear more from our incredible guests on how to thrive in the everyday.